Warning, Weirdish covers content regarding conspiracies, controversial topics, subjects that may trigger post-traumatic stress, and content some may consider offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Shapeshifters, destruction, and embracing your love and death. Join the Weirdish crew as they discuss folklore around the world.
Okay, welcome to Weirdish, where we talk about weird-ish. I am Andriana, and I am here with Brian and Marvin.
Hello.
Hello.
So, we're talking about some folklore today, and
yes,
I'm hoping to hear some stuff I've never heard about, because...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, why not? We're here on Weirdish. We're a couple of multicultural individuals, so we thought, why not just do some research on different cultures and see how different their folklore is. And there's a lot of cool stuff out there, especially if you're just a boring old American like I am with nothing cool. I mean, there's actually some cool things, but not as cool.
You have Bigfoot.
Huh?
You guys have Bigfoot.
Right?
Man. And Mothman and Goatman and giant alligators. I don't know.
Yeah, but like not as cool as like ancient folklore stuff. Like, a lot of the stuff we're going to be talking about is, like, ancient and cool and, like, it's been around for centuries. And this stuff is just like, yo, see that big hairy thing in the woods? Bigfoot!
Hell yeah.
Like, so there's a lot of cool stuff that we're going to be going over. And some of these may be popular stories, depending on who's listening.
Yeah.
But for the culture, yeah.
For the culture. And you know what? I want to start off with the definition of folklore because I... While I was doing this, I was thinking about it. I was like, I know it's tales and stuff, but like, I didn't have like a solid idea of what it was. So I was like, okay, let me do some research and see what folklorists think of folklore, right? So the term was coined in England on August 22nd, 1846, by a man named William Thoms. He was a British author, and his
William who?
Thoms.
Like Thomb's.
No, Thoms. Thoms.
Oh, I thought you meant like he was. It was really close to being spelled thumbs.
No,
I thought that was funny. He was about to get a big thumbs up for me. Sorry, continue. So
it's like Mr. Thomas Thoms. Without the A. But yeah. So he was a British author, and it was first. He coined the term while he was writing an article in the Athenaeum Journal of Literature, Science, and the Fine Arts, right? So during this time, like I said, this was in 1846, the word folk didn't have the same meaning as we know it today. It was used to describe illiterate peasants of a region, right? Obviously, today it's a much nicer meaning, simply used to describe a group of people, right? The primary meaning of the word lore as well was seen as an act of teaching or being taught. So that being said, we can define folklore as the relationship between traditional beliefs, history, customs, and tales of a culture, usually passed from one generation to another through word of mouth. It can be seen as a creative expression for its respective cultures.
Interesting.
Right? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I got a little bit tight when it said illiterate peasants.
It was a little harsh.
Not me, dude. That describes me to a T.
Wow.
I mean,
wow.
Not really.
I feel like it's a derogatory way of describing cultures you don't understand. But, you know, whatever. You know, the meaning evolved over time.
Damn.
So, sorry. It just popped in my head. If someone's like, hey, these folks over here, or like, follow these folks over here, or something like that, they're insulting them.
Well, back then, yeah.
I mean, back in the day.
Yeah, back in the
day.
But,
like, how are you, folks? Like, man.
that reminds me of, yeah. What's his name from Looney Tunes? A pig? That Saul, folks? That pig that said that at the end? Of Looney Tunes, yeah.
What was his name? Peppa Pig or something like that.
Porky Pig.
Porky Pig. I don't know. I didn't watch Looney Tunes.
Yeah, whatever. That
The guy. We know who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy with the tailcoat thing. Anyway, with the stutter. Yeah. So, you know, there are different types of folklore, which, you know, I didn't realize that they had subcategories. But there are traditional poems or folk songs, folk dance, legends, which are like a historical traditional tale, and urban legends, which is different because it's like stories that your parents said, oh, your aunt experienced this, or a friend of a friend had this experience. But really, it's just like this tale that your parents tells you to like keep you away from harm. Like, you know, don't walk outside without shoes on, you know, like stuff like that. You have myths, riddles, superstitions, animal tales, magic tales, religious tales, fairy tales, romantic tales, and jokes and anecdotes. So that being said, right, how important do you think folklore is to a culture's identity?
I think it holds a lot of really spiritual messages that have been passed down for centuries. Like, we're going to be touching on some Mayan folklore and Japanese, really a lot of different cultures that have been around for centuries. And it's really cool seeing how close, or not really closely resembled their modern day like society is aligned with these or their beliefs. But you can see like a small sort of resemblance in the storytelling and how things are portrayed in their folklore with like their entertainment of today or their like messages. I don't know, just basically I think it holds a lot of their culture and really brings to light what has been important to them for centuries.
And yeah, true.
There's still a lot that can be, you know, related to stuff that goes on in movies and dance and festivals.
Sure,
and all
I
that.
I can see that. What about you, Marvin? Do you think folklore is like important to a cultural identity?
Most definitely. I say just most definitely. I don't really have an explanation as to why I think that, but
you just agree.
I just agree because unlike Brian, I do have a culture that I grew up with, so I guess it's just part of my culture.
Yes. And I'm
just
so true.
I'm just used to like the, you know, Haitian folklore being there. And I'm just like, I don't know how I would feel if I wasn't, you know, if I didn't have that in my life. You know, I would almost feel like there's like a void in my chest missing. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I don't know. I feel like it's there. Like, people that I met around the world, they all have like that part of them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, now that you say it like that, it's like almost as important as your traditional clothing. Which, you know, anyone can just look at it and be like, oh, you're from like this culture, that culture. Like, I think the folklore has that much of the same importance as, you know, your traditional clothing.
Yeah.
In that sense. Yeah. It's just a part of it, right? Just like an external representation.
That's the word I was looking for, like tradition. And it's really a solid thing that's in that culture. It's in there with closely with like their religions or their what they
beliefs.
Celebrate,
right?
Yeah, beliefs. So it's huge. But I don't know about you guys. I'm ready to jump into the fun stories and
hell yeah,
all these cool things. So
let's get started.
Let's get to it.
Yeah,
let's dive in.
Who's going first?
All right. That'll be me. By the time I'm done with this, y'all will not want to have a cat for a pet.
I challenge you. I love my cat.
I love my cat too.
So let's see.
So we'll be talking about the, starting off with Japanese folklore, the Bakuneko. All right. So it translates to English as a monster cat or a ghost cat. This thing likes to eat fish, birds, small animals, and occasionally humans. See, already starting off on a bad foot. Oh,
that's,
I swear,
terrible.
If my cat started on some foolishness, oof, it's going to be bad for that cat.
Hell no.
It's a common belief in Japan or Japanese folklore for cats to develop supernatural powers and transform into yokai. When they get older, these cats start off as a normal house cat, but when they get older, maybe older than the age of 13, their tail gets extremely long, and they can grow up to the size of a full-grown human, which is way too big for a house cat. At this point, you need to go take it to the zoo or something.
A great cuddle cat, though.
No.
Hell no.
No.
Hey.
No, this thing eats humans, and it becomes the size of a human.
It can eat humans.
I mean, just a possibility. Don't miss that's like a lion, bro. It's like you get a cub, and it grows up, and it eats you. You were asking for that.
Yeah, doesn't sound pleasant at all. No,
I want the cuddles.
Well, they're beyond the cuddles because at this point they're so big they start walking, you know, on their back hind legs, like they're pretending to be us. You know, it's We don't want to do
Hell
that. No. We do not want
that. That's just weird at that point.
Yeah,
like,
and it's about to get weirder. It's believed that they have the abilities to change their shape. Uh-huh. And they can disguise themselves. They can disguise themselves as other smaller cats. So you would get, you know, the whole affection and cuddling. But then, bam, they transform into a human, right? You don't want that. You don't want that at all.
Wait. So do we know that, according to this, you know, legend, do we know if it's they can only transform into other cats? Or is it just, does it say they have the ability to shapeshift into whatever they want?
They can turn like, into humans.
Yeah, it's pretty much, I guess, just cats and humans. But yeah. I would imagine it's the shape of, you know, their caretaker.
Yeah, their owner.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, because that would be weird if you were like, you got a baby cat, right? And then 13 years later, when you still love your little cat at 13, where Moxie's going to be my cat, she just turns into some random person. And it's like, wait, what if like a shapeshifter gave birth like to this like being and then it immediately turned into a cat to where like on its 13th year of going through puberty, it discovers its powers? Like, what if it's really just a human shapeshifter disguised as a cat, but has all these other powers and just feels more comfortable in cat form because it spent its adolescent years as a cat, as a Bakaneko? I don't know.
Does your cat lick you all the time? Does your cat lick you all the time?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Oof, well, I'm screwed because my cat, Georgie, likes to lick my face. And the only reason I'm saying this is because they like to eat people too. Yeah, so this cat's getting a taste for me. It's not good. It's not good at all. I'm gonna stop that after this episode. Done. Nope.
Don't put the Food Network on, man. Ideas.
Oh my gosh.
Although I don't think there's a cannibalism show, so there's no seasoning of humans. So that's terrible. I should watch it.
Not only do these cats transform into humans, they'll feast on us too. They also speak our language, which is pretty interesting.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, but these cats also bring bad luck and curses and misfortune and whatnot into the house, so that's not cool.
So they bring bad luck immediately when you get them, not just after they turn 13.
After they turn. When they
after
hit puberty.
They turn 13?
Yeah. That's when they start rebelling.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Little shithead cats. And then, it just keeps getting worse. So not only are they just complete a-holes, you know, their tails also catch fire like they're effing Charizard, you know? What?
What?
Yeah. Why? No. Who decided to make this a thing?
I don't know.
Like, oh, God.
Wait, I just want to know, like, how the story even came to be.
Yo, exactly. Who had a horrible experience with a cat?
Oh my God.
What a fire tail.
Was it just some guy that like freaked
hated
out?
Hated cats?
Was just like hated cats and was like, hey, my cat has a tail that's on fire. It's a Bakaneko. What the heck is a Bakaneko? I'll tell you all about it.
Meanwhile, his house is burning damn down. You know, this cat running around, trying to play in this
insurance
scam.
Oh.
You can't tell the house how. Wait, what do you? You can't tell your insurance company, hey, my cat is a Bakaneko. Do you guys cover that? Like, I don't think that's a thing.
Sir, if you look into your clause, Section 3 specifically says...
Oh, my gosh.
No possessions, okay? Especially no Bakanekos.
Oh, God. Like, your realtor is like, do you own a cat? How old is your cat? Oh, he's about to be 30. What? Yeah, I can't sell you this house, bro.
Oh, man.
So,
and it gets worse.
It gets worse?
Yeah, so this cat also has the ability to reanimate corpses. This has fresh corpses.
What the? So they might
have been dead for a couple hours or whatever. But yeah, and then you know, not only is it going to bring back the dead like effing zombies, you know, it's going to use them like puppets. You
know? Little toys.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't want to play with those, you know, the hundreds of dollars you spend a year on this stupid ass cat, but it wants to play with, you know, like the relatives that you done buried in the backyard under the tree. It wants to play with all of them.
Well, hopefully you're not burying relatives in the backyard, because that's kind of sus.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Don't tell nobody.
I mean, yeah, maybe like back then it wasn't, or they had a burial ground.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
But you know, they got graveyards closest to houses, so who's to say that
true?
You know, they ain't got the crazy ass cat over there.
I don't know. You know, if you're a serial killer, you do not want a Bakaneko.
No. It'll rat you out.
Okay.
Yo, you come home one day.
Yo, so like, maybe there's some sort of like relation between the whole black cat, you know, theory or whatever, belief in like black cats are bad luck, you know, with the Bakaneko. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe that.
There's no associate
correlation there.
There's no, you know, color to the Bakaneko. It's just the age, really.
Yeah. So any cat like, really could be
number 13. Yeah. Cat bad luck.
Yep.
Number 13. Wow. Okay. In that sense, yeah, I can see it with the whole, you know, 13 being a bad luck number. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I hope my cat's definitely not a Bakaneko.
You're gonna go dock it
cool
still?
She were. Nah,
nah, I'm not.
I don't want
that. That's animal cruelty.
Nah, that's messed up.
Yep.
Yeah, you're gonna get a Bakaneko then.
I'll deal with it.
Would it be animal cruelty if it was a Bakaneko? Is it a spirit? It's a spirit, right?
Yeah.
A shapeshifter? Are shapeshifters animals? There's so many questions to be answered.
Shapeshifters can be whatever they want to be. Okay?
Yes. So the answer is yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess if you want to prevent having a Bakaneko, you gotta dock your cat's tail when they're young. You know, before they're 13, just to avoid it. You know, I don't support the whole docking thing, but you know, I don't know if any other cat, you know, in other countries would become a Bakaneko, because it's a Japanese folklore belief. So your cat might be okay. Don't worry.
So it says that they can speak our language.
Yeah.
But only after eating their owners.
Yes.
Yeah. So they can be multilingual, bro. They can go and eat.
So
many people.
But
what?
Yeah. It says after eating their owner, though. Once
I think that would apply to like any human that they eat, though.
Oh, okay. I thought it was gonna.
I don't
be
know. Like,
I don't know.
I'm not,
it says
I
owner specifically.
Yeah, like it would just eat like me. So cool. So this cat knows how to speak Creole and English.
But like maybe because yeah, he's right because it says their owner. What if the owner spoke more than one language? Is it like, do they have to choose one or could they do both?
No, I think they will speak every single language because they can shapeshift into the owner. So I guess it's like them adapting the language is only to sell the idea that they are their owner in case anyone comes over.
Freaking Bakanekos. If you're out there.
It's a cool story.
Don't burn down any houses and be a good cat.
Also, if you have any Bakaneko stories, that you know of, if you're, you know, from the Japanese culture, please send us an email. Please DM us. I'm so intrigued by this story.
For any of these.
Any of these, period.
Yeah. This would be really cool.
Yeah. So speaking of Japanese folklore, we're going to do one more. And it's the Honeona. I'm so hyped about this one, right? So in English, the name translates to bone woman, right? So Honeona is believed to be a deceased woman who has left her lover in the living realm. So their, you know, partner is a widow at this point, right? So she is powered by her undying love for her partner, even in death. So this helps her, you know, come back to life in a sense. So she can leave her grave, rotting flesh and all, and return to her partner. But, you know, aside from like the initial surprise of your deceased partner, you know, randomly showing up alive and well, he won't, you know, see her true form because he would be blinded by her, really, because she has like this enchanting power to her. And she creates this illusion so that he sees her as like when she was in her prime, when she was young and beautiful, right? So everyone else will be able to see her for what she is, but he won't be able to do that. So she's only said to like spend the night, and then she leaves in the morning, right before you wake up. And the more time she spends with you, or the more nights she spends with you, the more she decays. But as she's decaying further, the illusion becomes stronger, so it's harder to break.
To interrupt, just for clarity on my end, is this like just one particular woman that is looking for her specific lover?
Oh, good question.
Or is this something that can happen to like other other people that have passed? Like, is this like a
this can happen to this can happen to anyone that has passed. So let's say
it's not a specific woman then. It's almost like not like a curse, but
I don't know if I would classify it as a curse because it's just a folklore. But
yeah.
But the premise is that, you know, your partner dies, your specific partner dies, and that specific partner comes back to life. So it's like on an individual basis. It's not like one spirit for all of them. It's like, you know, your partner, specifically your partner coming back. If that adds any clarity, I don't know. Does it? No.
Yeah, it does a little bit. I'm just like, I'm thinking about it because like the premise of it is, I know we're not done with it, but so far what's captured my attention is that it's like kind of a sweet thing where she's like longing for her lover. But dude, if I one night woke up from the stench of decaying flesh in my room.
You won't pick up on it.
Yeah, but see, that doesn't work for me though, because
you won't pick up on it. Yeah.
So you're saying like the neighbors probably think I killed somebody and they just rotting in my damn house. But meanwhile,
The
zombie's like, you know, drop dead gorgeous, but really she's like, is she dead? See, that doesn't really work because I might get arrested. See, they might.
I didn't touch on this part yet. But pretty much, yeah, you're right in the sense that you won't see her or smell her for what she really is, like, you know, a corpse, right? But your neighbors, your friends, or, you know, anyone that works for you can see her actual form. So she's like this, you know, skeletal figure or ghostly person or whatever. So they will see that. You won't see that, but they will see that. So they have to, like, try to convince you that she is not what you think she is. So, yeah.
My gosh. I got chills from that. And that's actually a really common theme played in some horror films that are, like, slipping my mind. I just know that I've seen that in film. But I've never heard of the actual folklore of it. I know there's more behind it. This is really cool. I did no research prior to this on... before this episode, so tell us more.
So this whole illusion can go on for days, sometimes even weeks.
Jeez.
Until their passionate nights literally suck the life out of the partner, right? So he'll start to grow weak and sick, and it'll just get worse as the days progress until he dies and joins her in the afterlife, right? And the only way to prevent this is, like I said, if your friend or your neighbor or someone is like, you know, like, dude, that's a corpse. It will break the illusion of the partner. And, you know, obviously they'll be repulsed by the corpse, right? You can also have prayers and magic charms to protect your house from spirits as well. But it only works if you believe in the magic charms and stuff, though.
Wow. Like, imagine the, you know... Personally, I don't believe this exists, and I'm sorry if that offends anyone, but this is just me and my beliefs. But if I were to think about this as if it were actually happening, imagine the stress of, you know, first you deal with loss, and then you sort of kind of or start the period of grieving and getting over it, and then they come back to you. And the part of sucking the life out of the lover, now there's a couple ways I interpreted it, of like potentially, because you, it's only an illusion that you see, but you're still with the corpse. Everyone else can see her and smell her and
her, yeah. Necrophilia.
You make out what it is. So like, what max. If you're like there with, you know, your lover being all over this corpse and get some sort of disease or infection, maybe that's sucking the life out of them, along with like the you wake up the next day, they're gone. So you're psychologically going insane, your stress level goes way up, you're depressed, and you just got a bunch of like dirty ass corpse all up in your tongue.
Like, yep.
All that sludge.
Yeah, that's.
That, or does she like literally like just drain you some other way?
Well, it's more like a figure of speech in a sense, because, you know, she's taking your life force, but she's not physically like harming you or making you actually ill. It's just it's a double-edged sword. Like, she gets to be with you, right? But at a cost. So everything is at a price. So the price is you slowly start to die because, you know, she's technically taking your life force every time she's with you.
Like, what would happen if her lover died? Would she just go to rest forever?
Yeah, the boat or embrace each other in death, just like that hymn song. Shout out to him.
I'm cutting that out.
What, really? Really? Am I the only hymn fan?
Yeah, with freaking heartogram looking ass.
Ah, yeah, dude, yeah. Hell yeah. What? When love and death embrace. That's the name of a song, by the way. You should check it out.
That's also getting cut out.
Why do you want to cut out everything?
But man, the Hone Ona, I like that one a lot.
Me
that's
too.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. And her name fits her. Like, obviously, it's not the same as how I'm about to interpret it, but she technically resurrected to get that honey, though. So, honey, I'm not.
Oh, my.
Hell yeah.
No, I'm moving
see?
On.
See? See? She did it. She just did it.
She sucked the life force away from this folklore. So, here on Weirdish, we got a bunch of different cultures, right? Or lack of, like myself. And so wow. I'm probably going to embarrass myself with this one because...
Or me.
Andrea... Yeah. Or you, yeah. Because one of the folklores I studied is Belizean and Mayan, and Andriana just so happens to be from Belize. So what I did some research on is the Alush. And so there's no English equivalent to what, you know, to the word Alush, but basically people refer to them as Mayan goblins or elves or dwarves. And so they're very tiny beings. They're about like 1 foot tall. They got large eyes and they sometimes glow red. Their ears are pointed. So think about like Dobby the house elf from Harry Potter, except looks like really evil. And, like, big nose,
yeah,
big ears that are pointed, or just, you know, goblins. But they're sometimes said to wear straw hats, cloth shoes, or they carry bags that are also made from cloth. And here's the thing about them. They're tricksters, and their bags are supposed to be their bag of tricks. So, what we know about...
Hell yeah.
Yeah, what we know about the Alush, just right away, is that they are very destructive. They can be very destructive. As for their origin, the Mayans believe that the Alushal, the Elushab, predate humans and even predate the sun and the earth. And the Elushab are believed to be responsible for building the big ancient cities. But when the sun was created, they all turned to stone. They're mythological Mayan spirits that live in and protect the jungles, forests, caves, archaeological sites, and the milpas. And they're generally invisible. They only take physical form when they try to communicate with or frighten humans. and they're mostly seen by children.
Because children see ghosts.
Yeah. There's something about kids and being more connected with spirituality. Probably the innocence of a child not in their mind not being clouded.
Yeah, I think it...
You think what?
I think it has a lot to do with the child not being fully programmed yet.
Oh, you mean brainwashed?
I don't want to say brainwashed, but, you know, programmed to see things certainly and to close them off more, because I think they're more open-minded because they haven't been fully programmed yet. Like, they can they can receive more. They're more like receivers with a wider range of bandwidth than us as we get older.
Oh, so you're saying their pineal gland isn't solidified by fluoride at that young age?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Pretty much. they're woke. Children are woke.
And they ain't even know it.
Cool thing about these Elouche, they can actually be created. And
hell
so,
yeah.
Like I said before, there's a lot of incidences where the Elouche are known to be destructive, but they can actually help out as well. A lot of the times, farmers will want someone to take care of their land and they'll want an Elouche to help them out. So they'll contact a Mayan priest or shaman known as, and I apologize for everyone in Belize, and
Shaman.
I was going to try to pronounce it myself.
You're
I was
gonna
just
going
to say X-Men, but I knew it was probably like Shmin, because Elouche is spelled A-L-U-X for those listening.
Man.
Elouche. So in my notes, there's X-Men. So Shmin. Almost like Shaman, but Shmin. Take out the ah. Anyways, so the Shmin will create an Elouche for the farmers, and it's a complicated process. It takes 7 Fridays to complete. And it requires clay, liquid, and flesh from various animals so the Elouche can possess the best qualities of each creature, and it also requires a few drops of the owner's blood. So let's get into the process of how they're made. You guys ready for this weird stuff? Let's go. On the first Friday, the Shaman would form the legs and feet, mixing the clay with blood and the grounded legs of a lizard. So the purpose of that, we're talking about attributes, right? Lizards have very light steps. So they do this so the Elouche's steps would be light and silent, and he'd also add the flesh of a deer so the legs would be swift and tireless. So muscular light legs. And then a week from then, on the second Friday, the Shaman would add a mixture of clay and rainwater that has cooled in the night air for 9 nights. This would be used to form the stomach, and with a tiny added portion of corn so the Elouche would have a small appetite. And on the third Friday, the Shaman would form the thorax and heart with the blood of a dove and the blood of a jaguar. So the point of that is it'll be devoted to its master, but unforgiving of enemies. So on the fourth Friday, the arms and hands are formed, using the blood and flesh of a boa constrictor and a monkey to guarantee that it'll be strong and agile. On the fifth Friday, the neck and head are formed. This is the most important part of the process because it determines the personality of the Elouche. On the sixth Friday, the figure is baked in a clay oven fed by wood from ceiba and guanacaste trees. I had help with that, by the way. We edited the help out. I'm telling you now. On the seventh Friday, the figure is complete and is dressed by the Shaman. The Shaman calls upon the gods to give life to this lifeless figurine they got going on. And then it's taken home to meet the friends and family of the owner. And after that, it's left in a cave or a tree trunk. Life will enter the composed Elouche when night falls. And it's important that the owner of the Elouche leaves offers of corn, drink, and tortillas every Friday. If they fail to do this, the owner's entire family will get a fever. So,
yeah.
a lot of weird stuff going on there. You can create a trickster to help you with your farm, but if you slip up and miss one Friday, like, you put a whole, you know, illness on your family.
Right?
Jeez. Yeah, it's
weird.
You
know, the whole process of creating a Olush is interesting to me, because if you listen to our Witches Part 2 interview with a witch, this is going to sound very familiar to you.
Yeah, it's weird.
Oh, man.
So,
these guys are great. They're great.
I mean, I just think of freaking house elves, man. I love Harry Potter. So, anyways, talking about the Olush and how they're destructive. So, here's a fun fact. Back in April of 2010, Elton John had a concert in Chichen Itza, and the stage collapsed a few days before the concert. And it was said to be because they didn't perform a ceremony to ask the Alushab for permission to do it at the archaeological site where they were performing. So they had to call a shaman before building the stage again. And there were two other concerts there, and each one that before they performed, they did a ceremony before even setting up the stage. They had a ceremony with a shaman to prevent any sort of collapsing of the stage or any technical issues. So a world-class musician with a really awesome crew that probably don't put up with, like, any BS. They're just like, yo, let's go get set up. They felt it was necessary to call a shaman to help.
Imagine explaining that to Elton John.
I mean, he'd probably be all for it. Yeah. He'd probably just be like, all right, cool.
I know, but I always find it funny. I always find it interesting when you explain, like, a cultural belief to someone that, you know, has never heard it before. They're probably like, what? You know, to me, I think they would have, like, this weird reaction, like, what, you guys actually believe that, you know?
Well, I mean, at the same time, if it deals with spirituality and cultural respect, there's a lot of different ways people can be. Maybe he's a spiritual guy. I don't know much about him, honestly. Maybe. So
I would have loved to be there, though. Just not as a stagehand, but just to see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I apologize for the butchering of words. Hopefully I did okay. Had some behind-the-scenes help with Andriana. So, yeah, there we go.
Yeah, you did great. The Elish are definitely something that I thoroughly enjoy, mostly because I'm so into archaeology. Yeah, I find them cool from an archaeological perspective, because there's a lot of times where, like, if you look into it, ancient buildings or whatever, ruins, as we call them, you know, the people would be like, hey, we don't know who, like, we literally came here and this was here already. Like, we don't know who built it. So there's this huge thing in the archaeological field where they're like, we don't know where this came from. They discovered it and then we rediscovered it. So to have the concept of the Elush building everything before the sun was even made makes a lot of sense in
that,
you know,
dope,
if you look at it from that regard. Anyway, moving on, we're going to this one is, like, super common in the sense that I'm super positive that I've seen one of these before, right? So we have El Cadejo, right? So El Cadejo is common within, you know, Central America, and I believe Southern Mexico believes it as well. But in Belize, we have, like, a remix of it. and we also have a remix of La Llorona, but I'm not going to get into that. So this version of the story is very, very specific, right, to us. So if you're from, like, a neighboring country and you're listening to this, just keep that in mind if you hear any differences. That's the reason why, right? So the name is believed to have been derived from the word cadena, which means, like, a linked chain in Spanish. And then you have cadejo, which also means, like, messy or tangled hair. So these are both features of this creature that we're going to talk about. Features of this creature. That sounds like a rap bar. Anyway.
Feature of the creature.
Oh, yeah, some bars right there. So El Cadejo is described as, like, this large dog-like creature. Sometimes they say that it can be as large as a cow, and it has, like, goat hooves for feet and glowing red eyes. So when he's in like close proximity to you, and this is what you would hear a lot if you hear people talking about it, you can pick up on the strong goat smell. And you'll hear like the sounds of chains being dragged, right? Very eerie, especially late at night. So El Cadejo has an evil twin. And this is where the difference lies between countries, by the way. So in Belize, we believe that the black Cadejo, El Cadejo Negro, is the good one, while the white Cadejo, El Cadejo Blanco, is the bad one. In every other country, it's the reverse, because, you know, they usually say, like, they would call, like, evil magic, black magic, stuff like that, you know, in that regard, right? So that's the only difference, I think. So El Cadejo Negro is known to safely guard drunkards at night when they're returning home. And they protect them from El Cadejo Blanco and, you know, any other harm that might come their way while they're going home. And El Cadejo Blanco is known to, like, fool people with its appearance because, you know, you would see this dog with its nice fur and you would assume that it's good. But they said that, like, you shouldn't speak to it or turn your back to it. Because if you do, you're going to get crazy. Like, literally crazy. People who have encountered this creature will also become paralyzed from fear and they develop a high fever. And this is, I feel like this is common in all of our mythology or folklore, is that you get a fever from wood. Whichever folklore that you come across, you will get a fever at the end. So, El Cadejo, yeah, like the same with the Alush. It's the same with our version of La Llorona. It's the same with Ixtabay, you know, the list goes on.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know why we believe in this whole fever thing. But anyway, so El Cadejo will also follow you. Like if you cross paths with the bad one, it will follow you after you become sick with this high fever for 9 days until it is sure that you are not getting better. Like this thing wants you.
It's like hunting you almost, but just like in a more sadistic manner.
Pretty much, yeah.
Like making you suffer.
Yeah, like, it just wants you to suffer, yeah. So, and the only way you can scare it off is if you carry a cross or a cross-shaped object like in your pocket with you, or you make the sign of the cross with your left hand when you see it. That's the only way.
Wait, with your left hand?
Yeah.
How do you make a cross with your, like, with your left hand, like, you mean cross your fingers? Like,
no, the sign of the cross.
I genuinely don't. Oh my God.
The sign of the cross.
Oh, blind moment there. My gosh, man. I'm on it tonight. I think it's cool. Like, there's a lot of things that come to mind, like yin and yang, obviously.
Yeah.
Opposites and. They kind of look the same, besides the white and black. But it's cool that you have a protector and one that wants you dead. But man, I think the scariest, honestly, the scariest thing about this to me, because there is a scary thing about it, in my opinion, is that it'll basically stalk you for nine days. Because, like, I've seen a lot of horror movies in my day, and I've not been scared by any of them except for guess which series, which franchise.
The Ring?
Halloween.
Halloween? Oh, okay, okay. Oh,
yeah.
Creeper, like, 101.
You think, like, you think, like, slashers or, like, something deal with, like, something weird like clowns, but the thing about Halloween that freaks me out the most is... You can't get rid of him, and he follows you. It's not the, like, I'm going to kill you aspect. Like, we all freaking know if you're being followed like that, they're going to try to hurt you or do something. It's the fact that he follows you. So it's like, I don't know. That's freaky to me. I don't like being followed like that. Heck no. I'm out. Deuces. I'm not religious, but I'll cross. I'll do the cross thing. Get away from me.
Yeah, that's a cool story.
Marvin, have you ever came across... oh my gosh. Sorry, something just happened. So these are supposed to be like large dogs, right?
Yeah, like almost like a cow.
Like huge.
Almost like a cow.
Almost werewolves, but they smell like goats and they got
and they have goat feet. Yeah.
So at the time of recording this episode, I'm helping foster a dog for a rescue, and I honestly don't remember the breed. I'm not the main caretaker of him. And he's massive. He's 7 foot tall on his hind legs. He's 110 pounds. He's a mountain dog of some sort. And man, he's gotten here, and like, he doesn't stop following people around, but that's because he's needy and he's a sweet boy. But a lot of bad stuff has been happening, like just randomly for no reason, ever since he got here. It's like, do I have El Catejo Blanco in my house?
Uh-oh.
I'm just exaggerating, but like, dun, dun, dun. Obviously, oh, I'm exaggerating. Gosh. But what's funny is, we were making jokes with him because we were like joking about calling him Omen. Obviously,
oh, no.
jokes, because bad stuff was going on around us, and he answered to that, and then we were like, oh, are you a good boy? And I said, the power of Christ compels you. And then he stopped wagging his tails. And I was like, oh, hail Satan. And he wagged his tail. So I don't know.
Oh, here we go.
Just a funny little story in there for you guys. So.
Oh, that's an evil dog.
Yep.
You know what?
All jokes.
If you go down at night and you see him and his eyes are glowing red, that's a red flag right there. So hopefully that doesn't happen. But that's how you're going to know it's El Carrero.
Hopefully he doesn't give me the Roni.
Oh my gosh. Jeez.
Right? Man. Funny. That's cool though. I've never even heard of any sort of rendition of El Cadejo. I've obviously heard of like the Grim, or like, you know, black dogs. You know, black dogs are no good. Like, it means like death or something.
I've never
like
heard that. I know about cats, though.
No?
I've never heard that, but black cats definitely.
Yeah, we'll touch on that on episode 2 of Folklore, which we'll have in the future for you guys if you do like this episode.
But
yeah, El Cadejo.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure. El Cadejo, though, I've never heard of it. I like it a lot. There's a lot of symbolism going on with it. It's kind of cool. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it, man, Marv?
As a avid dog lover, I really don't want to deal with either one of these dogs. Nope, not the El Cadillo Blanco or the
Negro.
Even
the one that's
nope.
Nice?
Nah, not doing it, because I kind of live with my mom right now, and she would, nope, too much hair.
You know, I like this episode, because this is like, if you're a cat lover, you're going to be like, ah, and if you're a dog lover, you're going to be like, ah.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, that's funny. That's so funny.
Anyway.
So I think it's time to come to some American folklore. Or,
is it really,
you know,
American?
Rather, Native American folklore. For
all right.
Those that want to say, this is American folklore. No, it's not.
You're going to piss off some people.
American folklore is your goat man and your friggin' Bigfoot, okay? I'm just saying, like, this is cool. You know, I'm not throwing shots. I'm just saying.
All right. So this folklore is here from the lovely U.S. of A. out west in Arizona. And we're talking about skinwalkers.
Hell yeah.
Jeez. I'm just saying, it's hot as F in Arizona.
Yeah, you would know firsthand experience.
Oh, God. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. So skinwalker is a type of harmful witch who has the ability to turn into, possess, or disguise themselves as animals. The term is never used for healers. The Navajo people have been reluctant to share this information about skinwalkers because of this. Not much is known about them. Those who practice Navajo witchcraft seek to direct spiritual forces to cause harm or misfortune to others. This is known as the witchery way. This uses human corpses as tools, using the bones and the concoctions. So, like, spells and stuff with like, their hair and nails and whatever?
No, that witch stuff.
Oof. Okay.
So, witchery way uses human corpses as tools?
Yeah. To harm and, kill intended victims. That's interesting. Kind of reminds me of the necromancer from Diablo.
Yo, yes. Yes. Diablo 3, the Necromancer, the DLC yep. one.
Yeah.
Yo, I just got mine to level 70 during quarantine. I'm so happy about it.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, as a beginner Diablo player, not power leveling, like just playing solo, for all those people that are like, oh, that's not a big accomplishment, so whatever. Yeah. That game's so cool.
Nerds.
Agreed. So let's talk about becoming a skinwalker. They look cool. I don't personally think I would become a skinwalker.
You said they look cool?
They look creepy as hell.
Oh, okay. Like, that sounds better.
Cool creepy.
If I saw this thing
at
night.
Yeah, they do, yeah. Ugh.
Imagine seeing this at night, like on a dark road.
But...
No, it might get run over. It's definitely going to get run over. It's going to get... So, yeah.
Like, from the stories I've heard, like, which has basically just, like, been some creepy pastas, I've always thought, like, they were just shapeshifters. So this is pretty neat that it's not just, like, a creature. It's a form of witchcraft. So,
yeah.
So how does one become a skinwalker?
So he or she must be initiated by a secret society that requires the evilest of deeds. Maybe killing of a close family member, you know, maybe a sibling or something, which is, see, no, that's not for me.
That's
no.
like Abel and Cain, right? Well, no. Trying to...
No.
No?
No.
No?
I love
No,
my
I'm just
siblings.
Saying. No,
Cain
we're not.
And Abel oh, is, yeah, yeah, Cain and Abel, they were brothers and they died, but no, I'm not going to freaking
kill. I mean,
kill.
One killed the other, so I was like, nah, you know, you never not. Know. You never know. Maybe, no, I'm but, good. You know, they nice. Weren't Navajo, so...
I'd be like,
terrible
you trying
reference.
To make me kill my clothes? Can we be close real quick? I'll kill you. You know, we kind of just met. No. No.
Oh, my gosh.
A close family member. That is terrible.
That's too far. Too far. After this task is completed, the individual then acquires the supernatural powers, which gives them the ability to shift into animals.
The hell?
So, like, literally, I thought it was going to be, like, you have to go to, like, through all these holistic, like, rituals and, like, have some sort of incantation spoken and some other things, but you literally just have to kill a sibling to become Skinwalker.
That is terrible.
That is terrible. I thought it'd be... I don't know. No, no one go and kill,
like,
your
can
family.
Can it be a distant... A distant family member? Like,
right?
I mean, even that is Why that is still bad. One? Like, you're still killing a family, like, member.
Who... Right, like, who am I going to talk to about being a skinwalker if I killed my brother?
I mean, everyone's going to know, like, that you're a skinwalker because of what you did,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but my bros who I talk to, you
Maybe
know?
Maybe you can shapeshift into your brother and, like...
Nah, see, that's weird. Nah, see, you've gone too far. You've gone too far.
Okay, man. Okay, let me shut up. You can continue.
Oh, man. Most often, they are seen in the form of coyotes, wolves, foxes, cougars, dogs, and bears. But can take the shape of any animal. They then wear the skin of the animal they transform into, hence the name Skinwalker.
So basically, if I were to kill one of my siblings, which I never will, I love you both dearly, I would then be able to become a shapeshifter, it sounds like, into, like, animals, like animorphs.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like a Buffalo Bill situation in my head.
It puts the lotion on his skin, or it gets the hose again.
Okay. No. Okay. But technically, he wears other people's skin. Like.
Yeah.
He's a, anyway. Let me stop making references.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of sad that the Skinwalker section was so short, because I was personally expecting to be able to find a lot more information on it, but we're like. Urging anyone in Navajo culture, if you are comfortable, obviously be comfortable about it, or you can remain anonymous if you want to give some more information on skinwalkers or anything else in your culture. We welcome you with open arms to do that. But we are moving on now to some Filipino folklore. And... I have personally never heard of this folklore until doing research for this episode. And we're going to be speaking about the Aswang. I was calling it Ass Wang. It sounds a little funnier, but I mean, no disrespect. Words are fun. They're funny. But it's pronounced Ass Wang. So, Ass Wangs have, many different forms, depending on who you ask, and they can be categorized as witches, werewolves, vampires, viscera suckers, or ghouls, and some describe them as shapeshifters who can be in a human or animal form, sometimes even half human, half animal, so like freaking centaurs, you know. Shout out to the homies. They can also have a body of a large bat, cat, pig, bird, dog. So,
like everything besides we just shapeshifting,
we got shapeshifting tricksters, we got bakanekos,
Kadeho,
skinwalkers. Yeah, so what do these guys do? What do the Aswangs do? So they appear at night, rarely during the day, to eat humans. Yeah, their favorite snack is the fetus of a pregnant woman who's about to give birth, which is really crazy. Aswangs have, it's very odd, especially because they have very long tongues that are believed to be able to get through the roofs of houses or enter the womb of a pregnant woman. So he would literally slide his tongue in your vagina.
I was hoping it was just the navel, because isn't that where the umbilical cord is attached to?
But
I don't know. Wait, it comes out of the vagina.
I mean, but that's right. Anyway, you know, whatever. Wherever.
Anyways, it gets the baby out the mama using the tongue.
Rude.
Not cool. Yeah, that's. Baby snatchers, come on. Anyways, so to kind of keep the Aswangs at bay, they hate garlic and salt. I don't know what it is with garlic and salt. Maybe that's why they're referred to as vampires. I've heard specific demons don't like salt. So, and there's a lot of origins with their story. But the basic idea is that there was a war between good and evil, and the Aswangs were on the evil side. And one of the stories refers to the Book of Revelations, War in Heaven, between the angels led by Archangel Michael and the fallen angels led by a dragon, which is supposed to be the devil. And during this war, there were angels who didn't choose a side, and they were banished to Earth as Aswangs. And so the Aswangs are usually depicted as women in their human form, and this is due to their colonization and Christianization by the Spaniards. But why? Because women, freedom fighters, would attack the Spaniards during the night, and in order to avoid people joining them, the Spaniards told them the women were evil, they were evil witches and Aswangs. So this same logic was applied to local village healers and Babaylongs, which they refer to as quack doctors, so people would avoid indulging in pagan practices and use modern medicine instead. In the early 50s, the president of the Philippines at the time, the 1950s, sorry, these are timeless, the president of the Philippines at the time, President Ramon Magsaysay, along with the CIA and the U.S. Department of Defense, namely Major General Edward Lansdale, orchestrated a psychological warfare operation using the local folklore, superstitions, and myths to scare villagers from joining the guerrilla organization in the area at the time, known as the Hukbalahap, meaning People's Army Against Japan in Tagalog. So the CIA flew planes hidden by cloud covers over the villagers, broadcasting curses in the Tagalog language, and they spread rumors that Aswangs were living in the hills where the Hook lived, and the government forces wanted them out of the area. So 2 days after those rumors spread, the government forces hid along a trail known to be used by the Hook and ambushed people passing along. They did this without confirming if they were actually a gorilla or an innocent villager. So it was like just out of cold blood, they ambushed them. So when they ambushed these people, they would puncture their necks with two holes to make it seem like they had vampire bites, and they tied them upside down to completely drain their blood. And they placed bodies along the trail again so people would think it was done by Aswang. So it's literally, they took this folklore and used it as psychological warfare on villages. It's nuts.
Oh, man. Freaking CIA.
Yeah. Freaking CIA, man.
Imagine your folklore being weaponized against you. I mean, this is something you grow up hearing, and obviously certain things that you grew up hearing you believe, obviously, to be like 100% facts. So for them to take advantage of that and use it for their own advantage and their own goal, like, that's annoying just to hear.
Yeah, it's nuts.
I don't even want to imagine being alive during that time and being there and experiencing that. That is terrible. I mean, this isn't the first time that we've seen the CIA using people's beliefs against them, though. Like, you know, you had Operation Mongoose that the CIA carried out. It was that same dude, Lansdale, which, man, this guy, I guess he loved the idea of fusing.
Must be a fucking asshole.
Right? Right? I mean, I don't know what's up with him and being like...
Yo, if that was your great-grandpa, hopefully you kicked a shin.
What?
What? Yo, if that was your great-grandpa and you knew all that stuff about him and he was using a cane, I hope you would have kicked his cane out from under him so he falls on his face.
Yep.
Yeah, that's not cool, dude.
Oh, man.
Not cool at all.
Oh, man. I mean... I think it showcases his viewpoints of, you know, people who have these beliefs as well. Like, it's like obviously he didn't respect them enough to, like, be like, ooh, this is a bad idea. He actually carried out his missions. And he did, you know, he tried to do the same thing in Cuba when they were trying to overthrow Castro in 1961. So... This guy had no respect for other cultures and religions, obviously. I mean...
I don't know. That's highly disrespectful. Even if I didn't like somebody, like, personally, I wouldn't want to use their religion or beliefs against anyone else in their culture or them. That's just messed up.
But, you know, just to wrap this up, because I think... I just find it interesting because... When we're going through this, like, a lot of this stuff ties in with paganism. And I feel like every episode we keep coming back to paganism.
So it sounds like you're saying the episode for Poppin' Paganism is coming up.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I feel like it would explain a lot of these themes that we're seeing, you know, recurring over and over and over again, which sounds redundant because recurring means over and over and over again. Anyway, whatever. You know what I mean.
Poppin' Paganism.
Sweet. Well, paganism. You know, guys, we touched on six different pieces of folklore from different cultures, and a lot of really cool stories are out there, especially ones that are not taught in school, and we don't have to write boring research papers on them. So maybe it's nice for some other people to learn some more about cultures, different stories out there. And maybe you'll gain something from the message or just at least be a little entertained and get some insight from other cultures. So if you guys liked this episode, please do let us know. And if you have any requests for folklores to cover, even lesser known ones, our eyes are open. Yeah, so, and you guys can contact us. So with that, Andriana, let them know where they can find us.
You can find us on Twitter or Instagram at Weirdish TV. You can go on the website, hit the contact form at weirdish.tv, or you can send us an email at thatsomeweirdish@gmail.com. By the way, if you go on the website and you hit the contact form, it's literally just going to forward the email to thatsomeweirdish@gmail.com. So it's up to you which direction you want to go. And I just want to say that the whole point of this episode was to highlight different cultures that usually don't get a voice in, like, mainstream media. So if you feel like, you know, there's, like, this belief in your culture and a lot of people don't know about it, feel free to share that with us, because we would love to know more about every culture that we can, and for you to have a voice or an outlet to, you know, represent your culture. So hit us up and we would love to hear from you.
And you are welcome on the show. Hell too. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
One last thing. Don't feel ashamed about your culture, your heritage.
Embrace that.
Embrace it fully. We are here for you. To be your voice if need be. You could also do this anonymously. We don't encourage you to, because, again, we want you to embrace who you are and your culture, but the option's yours.
Yep, and Weirdish is a judgment, hate-free zone. We welcome everyone, all religions, beliefs, and we respect everyone that comes on the show. So
definitely.
And I guess with that, it's been some Weirdish.
That is some Weirdish.
That's some Weirdish.